I usually call launch like zero to one, right? Like you're starting with absolutely nothing and you're trying to figure out a product market fit. You're trying just to find your footing. And that is terrifying, especially if you don't have any other income. So, usually the advice is like, oh, do your side hustle, bootstrap something on the side. And I think those people who are patient enough to do that, I think they should. I think that's the ideal kind of way to get into this game.
Welcome back to the show. I am so excited to have with us Kevin today, who is gonna be sharing some really cool insights from his perspective of building and growing businesses. So, Kevin, tell us who you are and what do you do?
I wear a lot of hats right now, I think as many entrepreneurs can relate to. So I am
Oh,
the
yeah.
CEO of a textile company that I bought just over a year ago, that almost 18 months
Nice.
ago. And then I
Nice.
also am a partner in a fund investing in entrepreneurs who are interested in buying businesses, not starting businesses, but buying businesses, already existing, established businesses that have cash flow and product market fit. That's the
I
model
love
that I
it.
used, and I'm a pretty big advocate for it. And we've noticed a lot of people are feeling the same way in the market today.
I love it. So what you're saying is you haven't been a lifer in the textile business,
Certainly not.
but you just kind of wanted to start something. You're somewhat familiar with it, so you're like, eh, that looks like a good business to buy. I think I'm gonna go do it that way and leapfrog the launch mode.
That's
Is
right.
that what I'm hearing?
No, 100%. Yeah, I didn't have a textile, but I came out of healthcare. I came out of healthcare and I was a technology executive. So something completely different, right?
Whoa.
Yeah. So the idea was to go and buy a business that could leverage my skill set, and then mine was in, project management, technology. I was a deputy CIO for a large public health system, so I'm very comfortable
Nice.
doing, digital transformation and managing large initiatives and large budgets. So
Right.
I was looking for something that kind of fit that mold, and that's a little broad. So I was industry agnostic when I was kind of looking around, but found this business in one of the oldest industries.
Right.
And there's certainly a lot of technology problems to solve in these businesses. So it was a good fit. It
Smart.
was, it, I mean, it, it kind of ticked all the boxes as far as, what buyers are looking for, professional
Yeah.
management staff, consistent cash flow. One of the things that, we can talk about this later is, what if you want to set your business up to sell? What are the things
Yeah.
you want to do in order to make it the most attractive? And one of the things that was attractive to me about my business is that there was a decade of reviewed financials, which means the business was managed very professionally. That doesn't happen in
Right.
small business very often. So I knew what I was
No.
buying,
No, 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 no,
you
no,
know?
no.
Yeah.
No, that's so true. And for those of you who have an ultimate exit in mind, listen to what he just said. Like, there's not many people that do their financials in a way that it tells a story over the last decade, because a potential buyer doesn't want to just know that you had one awesome year. They want to know the whole story, right?
Right. Yeah, especially when a lender's involved, right? Like the lenders, guess what? You might think, you can buy on a trailing 12 or you can buy off of last year's rock star numbers, but you're gonna look at
Right.
the context, you're gonna look at the preceding years, you're gonna look at upcoming market or upcoming market conditions. And the bank
Right.
is gonna take all that into consideration. So yeah, it can't just be, you might be able to be lucky every once in a while, but that certainly shouldn't be
Right.
the rule that you assume. You need to show that you've managed the business professionally for a while in order to get the highest dollar amount for your business.
Okay, this is such a fun conversation, because I think that most of my guests have really been like the founder or the guy that launched it, the guy that like went through that whole exercise of product market fit and all that kind of stuff. And what you're saying is that you were industry agnostic, which first of all, I think is super awesome, because I think a lot of people out there think, I've got to be right here. Like, this is
Yeah.
the only place I fit.
Yep.
I personally believe, as you believe, that there's people, processes, and tools in every business and every niche and every industry and every part of business, that there's principles that are the same.
Yep.
And you have the background of technology. And so you said to yourself, hey, I could probably plug into any industry the tech background and the systems background that I have and make that business better. Is it?
Yeah.
Am I right?
It's the 80-20 rule, right? Like 80% of business is the same. It's the same blocking and tackling and all the different, you know, all the different verticals, but it's the 20% that's more specialized stuff. Okay, fine. So you spend a couple of years, you know, getting caught up and sort of deep diving, being a sponge and learning about the industry. I mean, I sure as heck know a lot more about the textile industry now than I did even before I bought the business. Truth is, I probably didn't, you know, 100% know what I bought. And you can sort of figure it out. I mean, that's kind of the risk, right? Like you only know so much. You can only, especially if you're coming from outside of industry, but you know that the fundamentals are there. And that you have a level of confidence in yourself to go in and say, all right, I've done the most of this before. You know, the product is different, but guess what? It's still a design process. You know, there's still a whole, a pipeline for design. There's still sourcing. There's still warehouse management. Right. There's still, it's all the same.
So walk me through just a little bit, like, you know, as you were looking for the business that you were going to buy and grow and scale, like, what was it about this one that caught your eye? What you said, there was a good financial history, but was there other green lights that you were like, ooh, that checked a box, that checked a box? What were those boxes?
Yeah, a couple of them. One was our position in the supply chain. So there aren't very many textile mills left in the US. We're not a textile mill, but we serve the function of a textile mill. And here's what I mean by that.
Okay.
So like, I've been kind of saying for the last few months that we're a textile mill without a weave room or a dye house. So what that means is that we're importers. We do all the design and everything here in North Carolina, but we outsource manufacturing overseas and import back. So, it's
that's cool.
Because weaving isn't that profitable in the US anymore. There are a couple companies that still do it, but certainly nobody is going into that business. It's very difficult. Right. It's a very difficult business. So I liked the position that we served in the US, right? Like, so we're basically a mill, we're a supplier. I liked being that versus a distributor so much. That was one of the things. The other thing was the historical numbers of the business. This business has done twice what it currently does. So in its heyday, it was rocking and rolling, printing money. And then, you know, the market shifted, some customers went out of business. This business was kind of built on the back of JCPenney. Well, so I said, I own a textile company. We do mostly drapery. We do some furniture, some upholstery as well. But JCPenney was running, you know, a bunch of drapery programs. Well, walking into JCPenney now, you're not seeing that. Like, that's not a thing anymore.
No.
So there's certain aspects of the certain channels that have gone away, but the demand is still there. And this business has been capable of fulfilling that demand in the past. So I saw it as like it shouldn't be. I mean, it's certainly not going to be easy to take it, you know, back to 20 million or whatever it was, but the potential is there. The business is out there, and somebody coming in with, you know, from out of industry with some new ideas, not really married to any particular way of doing things. I can be creative and change things a lot more than somebody who's been in the industry for, you know, their entire career.
I love it. Now this is something that, like, I think that what you're talking about and what you did is something that a lot of people think about, dream about, want to do, want to try. But I think that launch scares the crap out of them, you know, and I think that, you know what I mean? Like, I think that there's a lot of really great managers, a lot of really smart people out there. They're like, why am I helping this guy grow his business when I want to do my own? But I don't know how to launch.
Yeah.
And what you've done, I think, is just so fascinating. And tell me how this has grown into like a whole nother byproduct of what you're doing now.
Yeah, I completely agree that I usually call launch like 0 to 1, right? Like, you're starting with absolutely nothing and you're trying to figure out a product market fit. You're trying to just to find your footing. And that is terrifying. Especially if you don't have any other income. So, you know, usually the advice is like, oh, do your side hustle, bootstrap something on the side. And I think those people who are patient enough to do that, I think they should. I think that's the ideal kind of way to get into this game. There are others of us who are working jobs that we don't like, who are burnt out in our careers, and we're like, I just need to make a change now. and I need to get it. I want to be in the CEO's chair and I want to manage something at scale because I don't necessarily feel like I've got the skill set or I've got the even desire to go from zero to one. I want to take over at one and I want to grow to 10. Those are the people that I kind of relate to. I was one of those guys in a corporate job that I was just tired of. I didn't want to do anymore. I didn't feel like I was, you know, living, I didn't feel like I was doing my best work. I didn't feel challenged.
Right.
And I'd been wanting to buy a business, since I found out about this, this whole space since 2018.
That's awesome.
I had a business under LOI, under contract. It fell through, kind of licked my wounds, went back to my job. And then, as a result of a health crisis, in 21, it kind of was a clarifying experience for me to get back in the saddle and get it done. And so, you know, found a business in 22 after that.
I love it. I am so glad you're here. And I just wanted to take a few seconds to tell you about a program that we have assembled with a lot of our podcast guests and a lot of people who are listening to the show who are feeling the same way that they do. There's a recurring theme. You'll hear a lot of these founders talk about, I couldn't have done it without my team. I couldn't have done it without a support group of peers. I couldn't have done it without having someone to talk to that understood my feeling of isolation as an operator of my business. You see, you're not alone. It is hard running a business, and it's even harder when you know you can't express all your deepest concerns and frustrations with your executive team. It makes them nervous. It gets them scared. You don't want scared people on your executive team. So where do you turn? The Captain's Council is where you turn. The Captain's Council, it is an organization that we are put together with podcast guests, as well as people who are listening who are in the same boat. You see, peers are the only ones that can give you the type of empathy, the type of advice that only a founder or operator know and understand. Go check it out at captainscouncil.com. I know you're gonna love what you see there. We have put together an organizational structure that has small group settings, a global community of founders and operators, as well as monthly and quarterly in-person events. You're gonna love what you see there. I can't wait for you to check it out and enjoy the rest of this episode. I love it. And tell me, you know, a lot of people listening to this are probably thinking, well, he got lucky finding this opportunity. But I can tell you on Scout's Honor here right now that there are a lot of people running their businesses who are just like, ugh, I'm tired of this hustle. I just want a job.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And yet they have a solid business that's generating revenue, that's profitable, but it's just not satisfying their needs anymore. Like you mentioned, they had a heyday.
Yeah.
They lost their primary client and now they're like, oh, I don't know that I want to do this again. And they just want out.
Yeah. I'm hearing actually a lot more of that. I mean, that tends to happen with market conditions, right? Like people got through COVID and they survived. And then they're looking at it like, do I want to go through something like that again? Like where's the next, you know, baseball bat coming from? And do I want to hang on until that, you know, when does the music stop? And, you know, all got to sit down in those chairs. So I'm seeing actually quite a bit of people who are looking to take chips off the table.
Right now.
So you wouldn't be alone.
It's smart.
Yeah, of course. Actually, I'm working with a company right now that's looking to sell, that I'm going to make an offer on. And they want to stay in the business. They just don't want to own it anymore. You know, they're ready to take some chips off the table. You know, that happens when you're in your mid to late 60s, you know, and you're like, I don't necessarily want to stop doing this. I need to make sure my family is secure. Okay.
Interesting. I think this is so cool. Like, honestly, prior to this conversation, I don't think I've ever met anyone like you that's done that. I've talked to so many people that have exited for the very reasons that you just bought.
Yep.
And yet I don't hear it from the flip side very often. So I love this conversation. What do you feel like in the year and a half you've been running the business, what would you say is a unexpected blessing that kind of came out of it that you weren't necessarily, it wasn't even a value add that the seller was even talking about that you're like, dude, this is pretty sweet. Is there something like that you could share with us?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this, I can chalk this up to just naivete or what, but like when so I kind of playfully mentioned before that, like, I didn't really know what I bought. And it's kind of true. Like, the way the business was marketed was more of a warehouse distribution business. What it really
Yeah.
is more of a fashion business with a warehouse attached to it.
Interesting.
So I've coming from a bit of an artistic background, I actually enjoy that part. I enjoy the creative side. I enjoy the product side. I think a lot more than I would have anticipated. Doing a lot of, working with different constructions of product, fiber
Right,
content,
right.
looking at color. I think it's fun. The other thing is, a lot of people are, a lot of people that are kind of in my space look for geographically concentrated service businesses. They're pretty
Right,
easy to
right.
finance. They're pretty easy to understand. Like an HVAC company, a plumbing company, like they have a geography that they work in. They go out on service calls. Wash, rinse, repeat. I didn't buy a
Right.
service business. I bought a product business. So it
Right.
comes with its own separate challenges, but also, privileges. The challenges would be it's a
Yeah.
very inventory heavy business. And, I've
Yes.
got about half of my revenue value in inventory. So when
Right.
50% of your revenue is in inventory, it's an inventory heavy business. We're
Oh
talking,
yeah.
millions of dollars in inventory on the shelf.
I've had that kind of business before. It's different.
It's a challenge. It's a different beast. And then,
Yeah.
as far as benefits go, this is a it's a global industry and this is a global business.
Yeah.
Despite being located just north of Charlotte, North Carolina, it's
Yeah.
I've got customers internationally. I ship orders, to the Middle East. I ship orders to the Caribbean.
Wow.
I ship orders, all over the world. I've got international sales reps.
Cool.
I've got trade shows that I go to. I was in Germany earlier this year for a trade show. There's another trade show coming up in a
Nice.
couple months in Lake Como, Italy. I've got suppliers in
Whoa.
India, suppliers in Turkey. So I like that. I like the global nature of what I
That is
do.
fun. Yeah.
It's similar to technology, but since we always work with a lot of offshore, but
Yeah.
it's so much more. So to be part of like a global fashion industry
That's cool.
is very unique. I don't know anybody else that's done something quite like this.
Right. No, dude, that's super fascinating. I mean, like, really, this is really cool. So as you express those like awesome little secret things you didn't know about, the hidden gems, there's probably been some surprises as well. I mean, someone coming from where you came from, having a steady job, having a bit, someone else responsible for all the other minutiae that you had going on in the background of you doing your job, being the boss now, what are some of the unexpected surprises that you have run into, and were you able to solve them easily, or are you still working through some of those things?
Oh yeah, there's certainly no, I mean, how much time do we have here, right? I can certainly give you a laundry list of problems. One of the things that
Right.
I don't think I fully realized, just because again, I didn't realize it was as much of a fashion business as it was
Yeah.
we give continuity on products for let's say 3 years, meaning we have to keep
Right.
consistency in a certain product because when a distributor places it, they need to make sure that
I see.
it's consistent with what they've been marketing to their customers. Now,
Interesting.
that's difficult when you're a mill without a weave room and a dye house.
Yeah.
So I can't, if I was a mill, I could walk, into the next room and all my looms would be running and I'd have, the dye
Yeah.
house I could talk to and match up color. Well, all of a sudden my weave room and dye house are thousands of miles away on the other side of the world.
Right.
So it's the amount of, back and forth and communication gaps that really make this an interesting problem. Now, it's getting better with technology and can be helped with more technology. Even just things like
Sure.
WhatsApp are a great,
Sure.
tool for all of us. But making sure that we're working with our partners overseas to actually track these projects and treat it professionally instead of just more
Right.
like back of the envelope type things. That's definitely
Right.
been a, making sure that we maintain consistency in products like that. Not something I would have thought of.
Right.
And the other thing,
Interesting.
as you're growing a business like this, that's heavy in inventory, guess what
Yeah.
it takes in order to grow? It takes cash because you got to buy more inventory. And then there was a long sales cycle in a business like this. It maybe takes a year to develop product, and it takes another year to really see any return on that SKU. It's got to be placed with a distributor, and then that distributor's got to go market it. And then, there's got to be some attachment period. And so it's once you get the thing rolling, it's an annuity, right? Because it's a sticky product. It's in a book that a distributor is using, but getting there is the problem. Getting the new product attached is a challenge.
Interesting. Now that's so fun for you to kind of jump in and experience that kind of stuff. I think that, as people are starting a business, they learn that a little earlier in the game, those kind of challenges and stuff like that. But whereas you're coming into a 10-year-old business, you're like, okay, I really don't like this product we're selling, but they've already got it out on the table, so I've got to keep doing that thing.
Well, you like anything.
Or maybe you don't even like the supplier.
Yeah. You like anything that sells. So that's true. It may not be a direction we want to go in, but are you really going to kill a product that makes money? No, we're going to ride that out and see how long we can get.
Interesting. I love it. Dude, this is so fun. So advice. I mean, you came into this with kind of a different approach than a lot of people come into entrepreneurship, in that you know you have skills, you know you're smart, you know you've got all these things, but I doubt you had the money to come in and just buy this thing outright.
Yeah.
I mean, how did you work that part of the game of financing this and buying that business? How does that work?
So in our end of the market, which is typically going to be, under $2 million in EBITDA, which is, if anybody doesn't know, just a proxy for cash flow, you can call it your bottom line, right?
Sure.
So, a business that's profiting less than $2 million. There's really only one way to finance them. Well, that's not true. There's really only one debt provider that you can use, debt instrument that you can use. You can always pay cash.
Yeah.
If you got millions of dollars around, you can pay cash. But if you want to get a term loan, you have to go through the SBA or an SBA lender, rather. And so that's what I did. So I went out and I talked to a few SBA lenders who are willing to lend on these acquisitions. And I got a term sheet from a lender. And then what I did was I also didn't have the equity. So I didn't have, I needed about $800,000 to buy this business as for equity.
Interesting.
I didn't have $800,000. So what I did was I went out to investors within my network, and let me back up, because when I say within my network, I didn't know any of these people. I don't come from money. I don't have family money. I don't have, a lot of wealthy friends. Everybody on my cap table are people I met for the first time and raised money from. Okay.
So is that right?
When I say network, I mean network now. They're in my network, but then they were strangers. So there were, I basically talked to a couple mentors, and they said, okay, here's a list of some people that I know invest in these deals. Okay, so I'll go and I hit the email list. I called, I LinkedIn messaged. I just was turning over any rock in order to get, capital. I mean, a very long story short.
But they were only having to commit assets as opposed to actual cash that they were in, right? Because you did an SBA.
SBA finances a majority of the acquisition, but not all. So you do need to raise cash or put in cash to the business. They usually will require about 10%. That's about what I raised at my deals, about 10%. And then I also had a seller note. So the seller had some skin in the game, and then the rest was SBA.
Interesting.
So you could think about it. I mean, the typical structure would be like 10% equity, 10% seller note, 80% debt, something like that.
Cool.
So I went out and I raised this money from individual investors, and I did it between Thanksgiving and Christmas of 2022, which was the absolute worst time to be raising money. But we were successful. We were successful. And that whole experience kind of led me to want to professionalize this space a little bit more and say, wow, that was really hard, especially for people who are going through an SBA loan for the first time. They're probably making their first acquisition. All of this is new. It'd be really nice if people were able to outsource that raise. So I partnered with a couple other people, and we started a fund helping people do exactly that. So now with our fund, which is called Fruition Capital, what we do is, instead of me going out to individual investors raising $50,000 at a time, I can go to a fund like Fruition and say, I need $800,000. Fruition will say, great. We'll write you a check for $600 or $700. And then you can go from, you know, to these other investors and see if you can get some follow-ons to kind of round out the cap table. But it's a heck of a lot easier to raise $100,000 or $200,000 than it is $800,000. So that's the marketing play that we take.
I love it. I love it. This is really fascinating. I think that a lot of people, you know, look at what you've done and say, there's no way I could pull that off. But you're describing a way that they can pull it off with someone who's already been through it just by utilizing a team like yours.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, we talked to new, they're called searchers or sponsors or, you know, whatever we want to call them. They're entrepreneurs who are coming to us who have found a deal. And that's a whole other topic on how to source deals and look at deals, but let's, you know, they've done the hard part. They found the deal. They've negotiated with a seller to, have an agreement, an LOI. So basically the beginnings of a contract. And then, they come to us looking for equity. And, you know, at that point, they've already talked to a few lenders usually. So they've kind of got an idea that it's SBA approved and they can get debt for the business.
Sure.
And so now they're looking to us to kind of come in and fill the equity gap versus having to go and round all that capital up on their own. They can come to us and we can basically be a one-stop shop.
Well, and those that don't know, I mean, SBA loans are they're fairly thorough in their investigation of what they're lending on. I mean, they want to look at everything. Yeah. And so, you know, generally speaking, if you've got a deal that looks good to the SBA, chances are it's a good deal. It makes it easier for investors who want to jump on board and give you that down payment.
Right. So agree.
Interesting. Very cool stuff, man. I love it. So what if you're, if you were to attribute, like I know very few people that do what you've just did and described alone. Like generally people have someone they go to, they can lean on a little bit. I'd love to get a shout out. Like, who is it that is in your circle that has been there to kind of guide you through this the first time? And I'm guessing they're likely partnering with you on this new fund that you put together.
Yeah.
But you want to give a shout out? Who are we talking about?
I mean, there's certainly no shortage of people I can talk about.
Yeah.
But I was living in Dallas, Texas at the time. And I was interested in doing this again. So remember I said I did it in 2018, failed, and then came back in 2022. In that time period, there's a whole community that kind of grew up on Twitter. And there's a lot of just people posting helpful content and DMing each other, talking, sharing how to do this for basically regular people like me, people who didn't come out of finance, people who didn't have a lot of money, just regular, normal people. And one of the guys I found, his name was Kevin Henderson. He's now a partner at a law firm he started. He's a founding partner. He and a couple other guys started a law firm serving this market specifically for mergers and acquisitions, legal help. And so I DM'd Kevin. He had a few thousand followers on Twitter at the time. I had like 300. And I DM'd him and was like, hey, man, really love some of the content you're putting out. It'd be great to talk to somebody else in the Dallas area. Well, the long story short is I went to a SMB, small, medium-sized business happy hour. Sam's like, you need to go to this boot camp managed by my friend and they'll teach you how to do everything. Okay, great.
Right.
And then Kevin is the lawyer on my deal and that whole group, if you Google them or we can maybe provide a link, but they've done over $1 billion in their first year in transactions.
Wow.
From zero to $1 billion in a year. That's a billion with a B.
Yeah. Wow.
In their first
year.
So what that means is what that does is it kind of shows you the activity in this space, you know, that there's a lot of deals being done and that it's not, I mean, trust me when I say they're not all, you know, sophisticated finance buyers, you know, XPE, X investment banking. There are a lot of regular people just like me who are interested in doing this. And people that are listening to this might be one of those people that like, I'm a regular person. I've managed people at my job. I'm looking for a career change. I want to do something else for my next chapter. Maybe this is an option. And to a person, most of the people in this space are very willing to help. So shout out Kevin Henderson, my namesake, my fellow Kevin.
Yeah. You can never have too many Kevins in a circle.
Yeah. Agreed. Prince among men.
Dude, Kevin, what a great conversation. Great shout out. I love the whole interview. This has been a really fun one. I can't wait to put this out there and see what kind of responses we get. If you're listening and you're interested, we are putting all of Kevin's links in the show notes here. And so let your heart not be troubled. We are going to give you this information. You can reach out to Kevin if you'd like to. Yeah. To connect on LinkedIn, I'm guessing.
Yeah, LinkedIn's great. I'm on Twitter as well. And then I'll include awesome. My email and everything. I'm pretty reachable. And then I'm happy to direct anybody, you know, that needs some direction and point them to the right people. A lot of this is paying it forward, you know, that a lot of people help me get where I am right now. And I'm looking to help pull people up the ladder as well.
Love it. Love it. Kevin, fantastic, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You so much
Thanks
for being here
me.
Today.
Thank you.
Hey, what did you think of that interview? I absolutely loved Kevin. We had a great post interview conversation, and let me just say, he's a smart guy, and you're probably a smart person too. And there are a lot of smart people out there who just don't know how to do that startup. They don't know how to do those startup motions, and you don't have to be a startup guy to grow a business. And so as you look for these opportunities and you work with groups like his who have a fund that they're raising money to help people like you buy into a business, this is a fantastic opportunity, great pool of stuff to work with. And, you know, he and I talked extensively afterwards about what do you do after you launch? What should a business buyer like me do at those next steps? And I'm telling you right now, one of the first things you should do is join a group, a peer advisory board like the Captain's Council. Doesn't have to be that one, but I'm telling you right now, captainscouncil.com is the place to look for how to grow and build after you have launched a business or bought a launched business. It's a great community. There's 8 to 10 members who are just like you, looking to grow and scale their business. They need the advice, they need the support, they need a group that they can come together with to build and grow. So that is for you. Come check out Captain's Council right now at captainscouncil.com. Hope you enjoyed the episode. We'll see you on the next one. Thanks so much for being here.